Hey there, my Tanami generation. Thomas Mattis here, here to let you know that June 12th through to the 14th, which as of this podcast will be next week, the Absolution Network will be at Anime Next 2015 in Somerset, New Jersey at the Garden State Expo Center. Yes, we will be there at the convention. We will be taking pictures, we will be interviewing guests, and plenty more. So if you have a fabulous costume, and you see us, hail us down. We will take a picture of you and we will put it on the site because we always love letting people see their photos there. Also, we have several panels we will be doing as part of the Absolution Network, as part of the Anime Next. One, Jen Ramos, of course, has its Toku Time panel that he will be doing. So check that out, of course. It's a fabulous panel, and I myself will be doing not one, not two, not even three, but four panels over the course of the weekend. First and foremost, I have my returning Anime in America, The Evolution of the Anime Style, which is a sort of basically the same version as my look at American anime. That will be on Sunday at 2:15. I do not have which panel room to be in, but I do know the times. Of course, we also have Tokyo SOS King of Monsters, where we will decide through fan interaction just which monsters, which giant monsters are King of the Monsters. So we'll see Godzilla battle King Kong and the likes and everything like that. So you have that. That is going to be on Friday at noon. My new panel, Urbame, is going to be on Saturday as well at 3:30. Urbame, a look at American urban culture and how it's influenced the popularity of anime here in America. And then, of course, last but not least, we have Toonami, a celebration of a generation, a little bit later this year, as that will be at 9:30 at night on Saturday, unless they're having it at 9:30 a.m. on Saturday. It's one of the two. I think they have it at p.m. I'll double check on that. But keep it looking. It's either going to be 9:30 a.m. or 9:30 p.m., one to two, but it's on Saturday. So come check that out. So those are the panels we will have at Anime Next, and I hope you come join us at one of the best conventions on the East Coast, in my personal opinion, the best convention on the East Coast, at Anime Next in Somerset, New Jersey, June 12th through to the 14th. So until next time, stay golden.
Hey there. This is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough. This has been an experience we will never forget. This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me, I've waited long enough.
As I gaze upon the beautiful abyss of outer space, I can't help but reminisce on how we held onto our faith. Gold is how we stayed till the day that time would say that Toonami's back, bitches. Pardon my Francais. Now every week the Absolution blasts off while the masses watch as an old familiar mascot by the name of Tom takes a seat and kicks the broadcast off, making major moves like a triple cut backdrop. I still remember watching that Beyond doing damage and thinking, damn, is Goku ever gonna reach Namek? Obviously I got a lot of love for the classics. The speed at which I used to run home to watch was the fastest. Absolution moving, flying through the galaxy. Toonami's back with a slap in the face to those who doubted it. Remain Toonami faithful till the day that I am gray and old, and like a Super Saiyan's glow, I will always stay gold.
This is Nerdcore Absolution. Come to peace with your inner nerd, and after you can stay gold like T.O.M. Chilling out the galaxy and we know him. Putting tunes up that'll keep you up. Glued to the screen like you do too much. The galaxy is ours, the sun and the stars. Toonami's on and chilling hard.
Watching closely from a perch among the stars as viewers awake the moment when
hey, the spirit bomb can charge you to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative right here on the Absolution Network. I'm, of course, your primetime host, Thomas Primetime Mattis, and I welcome you to episode 120 of The Prerogative. On this week's episode, you know, we're going to climax. No, not that type of climax. Well, actually, now that I think about it, she does. I guess the play on the word is definitely she's climaxing, but yeah, and yes, I said she, because we're gonna be a little bit sexy, we're gonna be a little bit stylish, and we're gonna pump some lead and some angels as this week we review Bayonetta Bloody Fate. So I think it goes without saying by the name of the title. If you know the name, you know Bayonetta is a video game, which was on multiple systems, PlayStation and Xbox, with its second game being exclusive to the Wii U. God damn you, Nintendo, you can't see it, but right now I have a middle finger stuck up at Nintendo, because god damn you, Nintendo. But anyways, but yeah, it's a video game franchise, and this movie, it's not a direct translation, but they call it an adaptation, which I kind of disagree with. It's pretty much telling the story of the first game. Oh, it's, to me, it's a direct translation, even if they change a couple things for the movie. They're, in my mind, they're minor things. Like one of them being like the first time Bayonetta and Jean, you know, fight. Or at least I think that's been changed, but I actually haven't played the game in a while. My PS3's broke, so I couldn't like pop it in and check to see if did they fight on the train, but that's besides the point. But certainly, they call it an adaptation. And so, mind you, of course, this being a video game movie, it brings certain salutations, certain mindsets, per se, to think about. And I find that funny with video game movies. It all depends on whether it's animated or not. If it's an animated video game movie, it's gonna be great. If it's live action, it's gonna suck. I mean, when you think about listing the best video game movies, they're all animated. Street Fighter 2, Street Fighter Alpha, Tekken Blood Vengeance. I'll even put the Devil May Cry series in there as well. The Fatal Fury movies are, even as bad as some of them are, still better, mountains and mountains better than any live-action movie that's out there, with maybe the exception of the first Mortal Kombat movie, which I think is really the only one to really be good. I think that's still considered the only video game live-action movie, mind you, that's still good. Because, like, both Street Fighter movies, oh, God. I saw King of the Fighters. Oh, God damn. Like, really? I saw the Tekken movie. It's like, you got the character designs down. I'll give you that. That one was messed up. And just Doom. I mean, I'll give Doom this. I thought the first person shooter sequence was pretty cool at the end of that movie. But the rest, it's like, I'm surprised at the end of the movie The Rock didn't take 20 minutes to do a fucking promo. So, video game movies usually have this stigma behind them if they're live action, but luckily for us today, this is animated, so the stigma here is positive. And I'm positive I'm going to like this, especially with the amount of fan service that Bayonetta likes to display. Which, you know, speaking on the subject, kind of a behind-the-scenes thing, especially if you follow me on Facebook, I kind of released a rant. I've tried to do this episode a couple of times, and this is the particular part I get stuck on. The reason is, it's kind of hard not to talk about her sexiness and the amount of fan service. Do I talk about the beginning? Do I talk about it during the review? And how do I want to approach it? And I just kept talking myself in circles. The reason I'm talking myself in circles is I've come to the realization that I'm just burned out with this entire discussion. And that is that, you know, and I just want to leave, well, I'd like to leave it, mind you, at Bayonetta is sexy, and I love the fact that she's sexy. It's part of the fun of the game, part of the fun of the series, and leave it at that, which is certainly true. Unfortunately, the Jew in me, it has to be the Jew in me that loves to debate, that loves to discuss these, and more importantly, loves to be right, Not that I'm saying I'm always right, but I do feel a lot of times I make good points, and I'll leave it at that. And it's like, and it's making me feel burned out because I'm always searching. I've come to the realization I've fallen into the trap of trying to search for the way to that one argument that's gonna like that nailed it argument that like nailed it that argument that can't be debated against, that's almost scientific fact that sort of proves that what people say about fan service is wrong. And I've come to the realization that I can't. And it's become frustrating for me. Because, and mind you, this has been going on for decades, but especially in the past couple years, with the rise of, I don't want to call them feminism in comics, because there have always been feminist comics, I'm not blind to that, but there seems to be a popularity of a lot more coming in saying that they are comic book fans. Certain viewpoint, I'll say this, people of the viewpoint that sex in comics is bad, people who have the viewpoint that female characters wear too sexy costumes, that sexy characters and sexy costumes are only there for the male fantasy, the so-called male point of view, and that it teaches males that women are objects, rather than say that they're feminist. Because really, that's the point of view I'm talking about. Which, to say I disagree with it, is kind of understating it just a little bit. It just frustrates me. Because there's nothing I'm going to say to change these people's mind. And I guess it affects me because the concept in which people come to those point of views baffles me. Because it doesn't seem to live in reality or in common sense whatsoever. And I don't say that to be offensive. I'm sure people will take offense to me saying that, because Lord knows everybody takes offense to everything I say. But that doesn't change the fact that to me, I just can't grasp my head around how they come to these conclusions. Because it doesn't seem to live in reality. Or at least the reality I think exists, which is, you know, I think they live in the reality of, you know, people are bad, and people are easily fooled, and people are easily misled, and I'd rather live in the reality that I think exists, that people are smart. That's crazy. We're smart individuals. Even young, we can be smart. It's whether we choose to use our intelligence and use our common sense that determines our actions. Yeah, there are a lot of people that are just as smart as you and me. They just don't use their common sense. And me, that's something my Uncle Jay pounded into me at an early age, and a lot of my family members was, you know, it's about common sense more than it is about intelligence. So I guess for me, it's just frustrating me because, you know, there's nothing I'm going to sit here and say about Bayonetta's sexiness and the fan service that's going to convince anybody on the other side that I'm right and this is fun and maybe I should give it another chance. Which I hate, because I want people to enjoy themselves, and more so, I want people to stop playing the guilt trip. That's the other thing that's really frustrating me, is this is not about people having different opinions. Because if that's all this was about, everything would be fine. Nobody would be arguing. But this is about control of media. This is about control of the entertainment and control about what's being put on TV or released on DVD. People aren't complaining about how the costumes that female characters wear because they just want their opinion to be heard. They're doing it because they want it to change. They want to change forever what it is. They want to put rules in place that prevent anybody from doing it any other way than the way they want it. Can you feel it? Yeah. Now, I'm sure there's some of you that are saying, oh, but that's never going to happen. There's always going to be this fight, and there's gonna, people that are going to do it one way, and people that are going to do it the other. And to an extent, you're right. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't still fight back against that. See, I'm not necessarily about characters being sexy as I am about artist freedom. The artist has a story to tell. The artist is telling a story with his art. If he is having a character wear a sexy costume, it's not just there because it's pleasing to the eye or because it will sell figures or that men will buy doujins and jack off to it. Excuse my French. Not that that's real French. But my point is that they're doing it because maybe it's stylish and maybe it's a unique look. And sometimes, in fact, a lot of times, there's a story behind it. There's something to do with the story. Again, in this case with Bayonetta, the fact that her hair is kind of in her suit and that she's a shapeshifter. There's sort of the traditional Japanese play of sort of the dark is the light is the dark. Because they're more free and willing to engage in more human activities like sexuality and want and desire, as opposed to the light and the purity, which in its own way is sort of closed-minded and therefore more evil, because they're in their efforts to be pure, they become impure. There's definitely that play that you see in a lot of Japanese stories. Which again goes to the whole Buddhist mentality. You know, the Buddhism, the Zen Buddhist, and I just took that class too, where I learned about all this stuff. But the type of Buddhism that's in Japan doesn't really look at desires as bad. They look at desires as human nature. It's not so much that you have desires, it's if you're consumed by them that's bad. So somebody who engages in their desires freely, but is not consumed with them, is somebody who's looked upon as strong, which you can see here with Bayonetta, as opposed to the Umbrid witches, who their obsession, they are consumed by their desire of purity and remaking the world in their image, therefore they are evil. It's that Buddhist mentality, or at least the type of Buddhism that you see in Japan. So that's where all that comes from. And that's the story behind her being sexy and fan service, or at least part of it. Certainly, it's also there because it's stylish, it looks great, and people love sexy. People love sexy because, and you know, as I said in my rant, you know what? A sexy person in a sexy costume, whether it be male or female, mind you, tells me that this person's cool and confident and strong and courageous. Because it is courageous. You have to be confident and you have to be courageous to wear those outfits in public. You know, you have to be confident with yourself if that's what you enjoy wearing. So that's why those things tell me that. And that's why I love those characters, because I love following strong, confident, courageous characters who know who they are, who are proud of who they are, and have fun with their life. Because that's me. I wear what I want. So I've kind of, to close this rant and discussion and get on to the review proper, I've kind of had a tough time with this topic, which is why this podcast has been attempted over 5 times, or at least just starting this podcast, because this is like the farthest I've gotten in doing this episode. So, I guess that's my talk on the sexiness and the fan service that we are going to see today. I enjoy it. Fair warning, just so you can leave the show now. If you don't like fan service, you are not going to like this movie. I could get into the more political aspect of, you know, how, you know, also this discussion unfairly frames women. As in, they have to take a certain standpoint if they want to be considered respectable, which I think is even more heinous, and I don't think we talk about that. But I've already taken long enough, and I think that's a discussion for a better... I'd rather have that discussion with actual women on the show, which is something I hope to do during this summer, is I definitely want to have a discussion where I bring some female friends who are fan, comic book fans and pop culture fans onto the show to talk about things. So, that's my rant.
I know, right?
If all of you are not immediately gone, why don't we get to a review proper, shall we? So, like I said, today we are reviewing Bayonetta Bloody Fate. Bayonetta Bloody Fate is an adaptation of the first video game, which follows an Umbridge witch by the name of Bayonetta, who's sexy and just loves taking out angels and Umbridge sages. She has lost her memory, and she is on the search for her lost memory and just who she really is. Meanwhile, the Lumber Sages are preparing for the "It's the End of the World as We Know It." It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. And I feel fine. As they prepare for the end of the world to remake in their image. Yes. And Bayonetta is the only one who can stop him. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is Bayonetta Bloody Fate. Disappointed by the music with the movie. And not that it's bad per se. Again, it does all the things good music is supposed to do. It definitely enhances, it's the verbiage to the noun that is the action in the story. And it does it very well. It doesn't overtake it. It's nice in the background and it enhances the scenes. But it's just not as energetic as the game was. And I think this is definitely a case where you could have brought the music over from the game. And I think that can be said for any movie that is based off a video game, because not really many people do it. I kind of forgot this in mentioning video game movies, but Final Fantasy VII Advent Children. There's so much music that is either directly taken... it is directly taken, but then, of course, updated with new... versions done with bigger orchestra and everything that are taken from the Final Fantasy VII Advent Children soundtrack, like Aerie's theme and Cloud's theme, and of course Sephiroth's theme. When you have a video game that's based off, or when you have a movie that is an adaptation or more importantly based off a video game, you know, one of the signature things of video games is the music. And great video games, the ones that do get made into movies, generally, you know, have great music. So it's important that, you know, you take the music from the video games and, you know, put it in the movie. So, you know, Bayonetta, you know, she had the sort of Fly Me to the Moon sort of remix club version that was like at her start. And then, of course, that one that's from the dance and generally had the, and mind you, had sort of Devil May Cry-ish music and, like, and that's there, too, and that's fine. But what really made Bannon different was these sort of more upbeat, sort of pumping techno club themes that were much more upbeat. And again, they're techno here, but they're subdued. It's that sort of emo-ish club music. I think it's like the best. Like as you heard with the thing, it's like it's not as upbeat as, you know, the original music was. Like, it's more like they took a love song and then put a club beat behind it. Which, I mean, yeah, I know Fly Me to the Moon is the same thing. But, again, at least there they made that bit more upbeat. They increased the tempo of everything. And it was more fast-paced. Just, again, the original video game music had more energy. And that's what's missing from the music here, is that energy that was so important to the music in the actual video game that I think really would have worked. I mean, there are places where you see that. Some of the fights, in particular when they're flying on the... Anytime it was made, or Bayonetta needed to look really, really cool, that was there. But just in the rest of the movie, I wish it was there. In particular, in that title song, which you just heard, it doesn't have that same energy. And so that's really the mistake. I don't want to say mistake, but really the sort of criticism here is that lack of energy. Moving on to the overall style, this is a Gonzo production. Same people who worked on... it was Madhouse. I think that worked on Devil May Cry. I apologize. It was either Madhouse or it was Gonzo. I don't have my notes on Devil May Cry in front of me. I'm sorry. But still, just a wonderful job. The animation is sleek and smooth and just beautiful Gonzo animation. They have a certain style that you come to expect, and it was here in full force. It was beautifully done. There was really no shortcuts I saw. Overall, I just thought it was beautiful. I love the color schemes. I thought, again, contrast characters with backgrounds very well. And it really did. It seemed like it was ripped from the game, which is just... It instantly had that game-like feel to it. But again, it's hand-drawn animated style, so it's just beautifully done. Character designs, love them. Again, and mind you, I love the game too, and I've made mention about Bayonetta's outfit. God damn. I think one of the things actually I do like is that she has that sort of clock-like thing that's in the middle that makes it very distinct. I mean, Bayonetta could have been something that people would have been saying, like, oh, she's a Power Girl ripoff. She has the same circle in her chest area. And I think that shows you things like how you can make a character really feel different, stand out, by doing one little thing to make them different from some other character has the same thing. If they hadn't put anything there, I think you probably would have heard a lot of Power Girl comparisons, at least in her outfit. And a lot of other anime characters that have sort of same hole in the chest. Not in the chest, but in her clothing and the chest area type of deal. But here they put that sort of like clock mechanism there that just makes it distinct and different. And then of course, attractive women in smooth black bodysuits always work. You know. When it's characters like this, it always works. And it's just... it's all black, but really what makes it stand out, again, also, besides the clock mechanism, is the textures. They do a great job of showcasing the texture of the outfit. It's not just, like, the smooth, like, latex bodysuit. Like, you see, like, stitch patterns and crosshair patterns and everything like that. Rodan, I love Rodan's design. Again, oh god, who does he... The Blade-esque design. Not like Wesley Snipes' Blade. But Spike TV Blade, with the bald head, the goatee, and everything. But bigger and stronger. There's somebody else he reminds me, but I can't put my finger on it. That, and then, of course, Enzo. It's, again, brownish, earthy colors that give him a neutral feel. Luca's design is, I always thought, was really well done in the game. And again, it's brought over here. Again, it's hard to really comment on the designs, I think, because again, they're taken directly from how they were in the game. And I love them in the game, and I love them here. Luca's design, again, is sort of the pretty boy with the hair and the trench coat and everything, works very fine. One thing I think they work very well with the main character designs is there's a lot of neutral colors that make sort of the bigger main characters, like Jean in her red and her fur, which again, just a very unique outfit and just makes her stand out as well. Bayonetta stands out with her black, and therefore the other characters stand out very well. And then there's Chizur, who stands out very well in her white outfit. I was looking at her name, like, am I pronouncing that right? The young girl who turns out to be Bayonetta herself, or Bayonetta's memories, per se. At least I think that's the indication. But yeah. Again, I love the fact that, you know, the little white dress and the doll that sort of contrasts who Bayonetta is now, you know. And again, the whole story there that kind of tells you what's happening to where, you know, Bayonetta, she's in black because, you know, she's in the dark of who she is. And then here's Bayonetta's memories in the form of a little girl who's, you know, she is the light that she is looking for, even though she doesn't realize it. You know, so you have that sort of storytelling element going on there that I really like. And I've always liked whenever anybody does that. The action animation is just spectacular. I love the fights in this movie. They're just, they give you the feel of the video game. And sort of the stylish action that is from the video game. One thing I love is that they actually bring, like, the alternate weapons. It, like, they have her using the blade, the bazooka, is that everybody loves to put on their feet, the shotgun. They don't bring the ice skates. I used to, that was my favorite combination. I think they also had the whip in there. But my favorite combination was guns, katana blades, and the ice skates. That was just my favorite, because that caused the bigger combo. But definitely very true to what the video game was, action-wise. Bringing in a lot of the alternate weapons. It's like, where the hell is she stealing all this shit? But again, it's that thing to where, again, they're playing with the whole witch and magic aspect, and sort of they're in these little alternate pocket dimensions that you can just bring them out of. And then, of course, the transformation sequences of the hair, just exactly like they are in the game, just with all the fan service and all the, like, warning, kids, bad language about to be said. You about to get fucked up. Badly. And I love that they brought, like, all of the actual bosses that you saw in the game there. I thought that was done extremely well. So, really, animation-wise, I think the star of the show is the action scenes. They're extremely well done, and they're really faithful to what the video game was. So, again, it captures that charm of the video game perfectly. And the backgrounds and special effects are done extremely well. Again, backgrounds, locations, everything taken straight from where the video game was, and it's almost as if you're looking at the sort of the art book of the video game locations. You know, like, you can get that art book, like the art of Bayonetta, and then they have the chapter that's like shows the artwork of the locations, like hand drawn. That's what it feels here, except that again, it's more 3D and it pop and everything, and it's just It's so beautifully well done. And the special effects, water and everything, and fog and everything. And in particular in that bath scene, which is the most uncomfortable fan service scene I've ever seen in my life. Because you want to go crazy for the fan service. Well, we'll talk about that later. Yes, I'm going to tease you. Because I have that, but yeah. The fan service where she's in the bath with Cesare. At some point, I'm going to get the name. Cereza. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Anyways. Yeah, that was a very uncomfortable fan service scene. But again, you look at that and the steam elements of that scene and everything. So this, because the whole fan service was, we're going to show you tons of fan service, just no nip. Done extremely well. But then also in like scenes where there's rain, and there's bullets flying everywhere and all those special effects and shadow effects, all done extremely well. So that's it for animation, and I'm going to take a break. Because just thinking about the fan service is getting me... What's the good word for this that is not going to creep anybody out? Well, I've already failed there, because just by saying that, you're probably already creeped out about what the hell I've been thinking. So, I'm going to take a break. I'm going to let you take a break and take a shower. And I'm going to play some promo for some friends, and when you come back, we're going to get into acting and into story.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Hey everyone, my name is Michael Bailey.
And I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And we host a podcast called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast.
Presented by the Superman homepage. On the show... Wait.
What?
This just isn't working out for me. It's not bombastic enough. We need something epic.
Like what?
Welcome to From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast. Presented by the Superman homepage. I am Jeffrey Taylor.
And I am Michael Bailey.
From Crisis to Crisis chronicles the adventures of Superman.
Wait. I'm just not feeling this.
I'm just wondering how there's a needle scratching sound when all of this is clearly digital.
Look, all we need to say is that this is a trailer for a show called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast presented by the Superman homepage. My name is Michael Bailey.
I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And every week we give in-depth synopsis and reviews for just about every Superman book published between Man of Steel number 1 in 1986.
And Adventures of Superman number 649 in 2006. We also talk about the related Superman media, what was happening in the rest of the world when these comics were published, and what else was going on in the DC Universe.
The show drops every Thursday-ish at the Superman homepage, which is located at www.supermanhomepage.com.
From Crisis to Crisis is also a proud member of the Superman Podcast Network, located at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
So join Jeffrey and I each week as we explore Superman during the post-crisis era, which includes Exile, Panic in the Sky, Doomsday, The Marriage, and beyond.
And write into the show at FromCrisisToCrisis@gmail.com and hear it read on the air. Eventually, because we get behind on that sort of thing.
Superman created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. Side effects from Crisis to Crisis include loss of money from buying back issues, a desire to read 20-year-old comic books, nausea, drowsiness, pizza, blurred vision, upset stomach, a desire to kick puppies and kittens, and backache from lifting boxes of Superman comics. If the excitement of From Crisis to Crisis lasts more than 4 hours, seek immediate medical attention.
I guess you weren't so tough after all, were you? Now it's time to send you to the next dimension.
291 original episodes.
This can't be. It's still going up!
325 manga chapters.
You act innocent, but you're deadly.
Time to die!
Dozens of characters, hundreds of enemies, and a whole lot of violence.
That kind of violence is pointless!
You see, Super Saiyans tend to be a bit violent.
Oh, crap!
Join hosts Donovan and Jesse as they cover the arrival of the Saiyans, the journey to Namek, the battle with Frieza, the mystery of the androids, and the terror of Majin Buu.
I lied when I said you could go, at least partially lied, for I will let you go to another dimension.
The Next Dimension, a Dragon Ball Z podcast. Join the fight at dbznextdimension.libsyn.com.
See ya.
Greetings, podcast listener. Do you like...
Gotcha, Mom!
Or maybe...
Dragon! Flame!
How about...
Tatsuo! Ganido!
Or...
In the year 1999, an abandoned alien battle fortress crash-landed on the planet Earth. Our most brilliant scientists and engineers spent the next 10 years reconstructing the damaged ship and studying its highly advanced space technology called Robotech.
Do you remember...
Our Star Blazers!
Or this?
The year is after Colony 195. As the world constantly changes in the chaotic era, there are two mobile suits that could turn humans into the ultimate weapon. The Wing Zero, and the Epion.
Or maybe even this.
After the desire for blood rules all, the only hope left is the one they call D.
Or this.
Gene, grappler ship's dead ahead!
It wouldn't be fun otherwise. Let's do it!
Or...
If Cardis is allowed to be reborn, she'll destroy Marmo as well as Lodos.
Or have you seen the latest episode of...
And just like that, everything changed. At that terrible moment, in our hearts, we knew home was a pen, humanity, cattle.
If you answered yes to any of these questions, then you should check out Anime Freaks, hosted by Dr. Bill Robinson and me, Gene Hendricks. Anime Freaks is a monthly podcast covering all things anime. It is available at twotruefreaks.com. And on iTunes under Two True Freaks Presents Anime Freaks.
Hey, Michael.
Hey, Dad.
We need to record another new trailer.
Another one?
Yes. You know that we read comics and then talk about comics, because as we've established, talking about comics you've not read is just dumb.
Yeah, and you make me do it every Thursday.
Well, we've moved.
Have we?
Yes, we have outgrown our old location.
I don't feel like I've moved.
And we have now moved to twotruefreaks.com.
What was that again?
Twotruefreaks.com. Hey, Kids Comics, still every Thursday at twotruefreaks.com.
And welcome back, and let's get right into it with acting. First, it's time to go over our cast list. We have Helena Taylor as Bayonetta, Yuri Lowenthal as Luca Redgrave, Joy Gillian as Reza, Gray DeLazelle as Jean. I always, for whatever reason, I think I call her Gray DeLisa or something like that, so I usually stumble upon there. David Fenroy as Rodin, John Kasher as Enzo, and J. Grant Albeck as Father Balder. I really enjoy the voice acting. I mean, with our title character, as we start with protagonist, I mean, Helena Taylor is just, oh my god. I wonder if this is all she's done, because I can't find a Wikipedia page on her. But oh my god, does she nail the voice. It's like just, oh god, that great, sexy British voice that, you know, I have with Bayonetta in my mind. She nails it. I mean, she was the, she did the voice for the video game as well. So that's the great thing here, is they brought the voices, for the most part, from the video game. So I think with a couple of exceptions, but not really in the main cast. But she just, oh god, that sexy, like, I know what I'm doing, I don't give a fuck, attitude. It's like, you know, that whole, like, are you gonna give me some fun? Well, let's have some fun. It's like, yes. It's just, her voice is just, make the character so cool and so fun. It's enjoyable to watch. You just you want to see more adventure just based off of voice. It's just because she just nails the character. Yuri Lowenthal as Luca, I did a terrific job with him. He was great in his comedy spots. I mean, I'll forgive him for voicing Sasuke. I mean, mind you, we're talking about the same person who like plays Robin now and all of that. So he did a really terrific job with Luca and just did a great job of being sort of the supporting character and also sort of the info dump character that Luca was throughout the movie. Joy Jillian, I thought, did a great job as Cereza. Yes, I'm going to continue to pronounce that name so slowly as I do. Again, that just sort of childlike innocence and that whole, mommy, 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 be mad at me. It's like, it made that character work. It really did. Grey Delazelle, I think this was a chance. I can't remember. I don't have it in front of me whether she was actually in the game, but she did Jean really well, and again, that sort of mystery character that you knew had all the answers but wasn't giving them, and so played that sort of is she the villain, is she ally type of character really well. And of course, Rodan and Enzo. First of all, Enzo, John Kessler, doing his best, not Al Pacino, but Joe Pesci, excuse me. Best Joe Pesci. It was one of the things I loved, I absolutely loved about the game, was his, the Joe Pesci-ish. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that Enzo is based off Joe Pesci. It's no doubt. In fact, I think the actual video game makers admit the such that they developed the character to be like Joe Pesci. I was like, God damn, I love this character. I want to see more of this goddamn character because I laugh every time I see him on screen. And of course, Rodan, just the cool, like, yeah, baby. You know, I've got your guns for you. It's like almost coming off like a sort of porn star or version of a bar owner. It's like, God damn. God damn it. And these characters together, they just have such great chemistry, and they work so well. But yeah, like, Rodan, Dave Fenway had that perfect sort of, like, almost 20-ish, 19's 20-ish sort of noir bar owner, you know, the one that has, like, they always gives that helpful tip that leads directly to the information and everything. So yeah, I definitely loved it for that reason. Overall, I thought the protagonist voice acting was great. James Grant Albeck, again, Father Balder, he did okay with the role, but there's really nothing special about the villain. There's not, of course, there's also not a lot of focus put on it, but you know, that it's the one sort of thing about ultimately the villain is that it was your traditional, I'm a luminous sage, and I think the world has been, you know, or I'm from whatever religion this is, and I think the world has gone to hell, and we need to bring Armageddon, and blah, 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 and, you know, I want to, of course, end the world, because, of course, to rule the world, of course, type of deal. And he did it well, but there's just really nothing memorable about the villain. Again, all the characters that are memorable here are definitely the protagonists and its supporting cast. The villain's personality is really a second thought process here, and I think that can be a criticism. Mind you, like, in the game, like, all the bosses, everything, they were really creatively designed, but the boss was just, you know, pretty substandard religious cult leader that wants to rule the world. And that's, it is really sort of the criticism of that character, and the villains are not as good as they can be because of that. But then again, a lot of the focus in the game, as it is in the movie, is on Bayonetta and her story. It's just one of those things to where, like, this is a great game that could be even greater if it had this fantastic, great villain. You know, I think back to the villain from Devil May Cry 3, the sort of the jester. I love that character. And, like, had that been the leader of this cult? Or, like, he had this role appearance, and then he goes into this crazed, consumed, psychopathic sort of, like, yes, yes, I finally have done it. Hey, the world will end, and I will recreate it in my image. You know, that more playful, just, like, make the villains more fun, rather than the boring way they were here. So, yeah. I mean, there is the big bad main villain, the god, slash goddess, is supposed to bring the end of the world, but then again, we'll talk about what happens to her story, which I think is a great segue to go into his story. Like I said, overall, this plot is directly taken from the first game. It is basically the same story. And for the most part, they're true to the story. They're true to how she travels, how she first goes into the town, then into the demon world, or the world, the parallel world, whatever it is in between. It's not a demon world, but it's this world in between to unlock gates and everything like that. You know, which allows her to get to the, of course, the road that she travels, or she eventually escaped the city, attempted to be destroyed, she's able to escape from it, she goes down the road in which she's chased, and that fabulous scene, which eventually gets her to the airport, where she fights Big Bad, and of course, defeats him, and in the exact same way, by doing sexy dance, release hair, hair forms into the fist, and just like, knocks, just like Mike Tyson on his girlfriend. I'm sorry, that was a horrible joke. I really am. But yeah, just knocks, just like, just pummels him with hair fists, which can be taken completely out of context. But that, and then of course the plane ride to the Luminous Sage's big city, in which they are attacked, and Bayonetta like bails out, and then rides a giant missile to the city where her and Jean fight, eventually say, and everything, and then of course the whole thing to where they're going to space with the gods. It's like, I don't want to say that this game jumped the shark, because that would mean the shark would have had to jump, but they landed on the shark, jumped the shark themselves, beat the shark dead, and cooked it and fried it. And this in the good way. It's just like, it's taken directly from the game, and it's all the fun that is the game. Just crazy stylish and just out there and unafraid and unapologetic, good, gooey fun. And I don't mean gooey in the, sort of like the bloody gooey. I'm talking about gooey like a chocolate chip cook is gooey. Just that goody, gooey, fun. But pretty much, that's what it is. And I think it adapts the story really faithful and really well. And that's, I think, very important for this movie, because this is basically telling the story of the first game. And I think anybody who maybe watches this movie first, before they play the game, will have a good idea about what the game is about. And a large part of that is, one thing I think the movie does better than the game is the mystery. Now, I think this is also due to the fact that this is a movie and you sit there and you watch it for 2 hours and you're told the whole story. Whereas with the game takes about 10 to 15 hours to complete. So you may forget important plot points, you know, while playing the game, because you'll play the game for a couple of hours, like an hour or two, save and put it down, come back the next day, play for another two, and it may take you a week or two or three to beat the game. And so you may forget important plot points, but also the fact that I think overall in remembering the game, I still felt confused about exactly, okay, who was Silverza? What was her importance and everything? Whereas here in the movie, they lay it out much better. And that whole mystery aspect is done extremely well. I didn't completely understand the whole how Luca realized Bayonetta didn't kill his father. And then it came to the angels. And they're like, you know what, they did do that in the game. But it's done the same way. But it just seemed like the movie did it better. And that may just be the fact that I hadn't played the game in a while. And there are things I don't remember. But overall, it just seemed like they did the whole mystery aspect of everything better. The mystery about who Bayonetta was. Who Zereza was. And what she means to Bayonetta. And, Luca's mystery and everything. All the mystery aspects of the game, I think, done extremely well in the movie. And that keeps, I think, people vested and interested in about what's going to happen. Even if you know what's going to happen. So, and really, those are the two big things when it comes to the plot. Overall, it's a direct adaptation from the actual game. And it keeps a lot of the same themes of the game of, pretty much being yourself, being proud of who you are. Because that's definitely with Bayonetta's past of, she was everybody in a way sort of ostracized her because she was the child of a Umbridge witch and a luminous sage and everything. And that's supposed to bring the end of the world. And people were trying to use her and everything. And the fact that she does things on her own, that she's her own person. And as she does what she wants to do. And that's the whole theme running through here, through the movie that also runs through the game that they brought over. And then, of course, it being done in a sleek, stylistic, sexy, fun. This is, the game, like Devil May Cry, like God of War, like Dante's Inferno. There's really no sort of underlying theme other than sort of the traditional themes that come with those games in regards to, it's a blockbuster. It's like a summer blockbuster movie, and these are like summer blockbuster games. They may be released like in fall or any time during the calendar, but that's what they are. They're like action movies. You enjoy them. Sometimes can be a bit stupid, but fun, just enjoyable, and that's what you do. You enjoy them, and that's pretty much it. So those two plot points of the whole mystery aspect that is the cornerstone that keeps the plot together works really well, and gives you the reason to why she's traveling and fighting all these monsters. And of course, there's the gracious amount of fan service, which I love throughout the game. It captures the same amount of just awesomeness of the fan service from the game, in particular at that end, where they got that goddamn luminous goddess, and the Umbridge witch goddess comes, and they shoot it, and just like puts it on that horse, and just starts whipping it. It's like, am I supposed to feel aroused now? What am I watching? I don't know what I'm watching, but it's awesome, because it's hilarious. I'm laughing my ass off. It's just... and then they're thrown into the sun. Apparently Scott Gardner was a part of this movie. So overall, it's a really good adaptation of the video game. And I think that's the final thing to talk about here is, ultimately, what is this movie? It's a great adaptation of the actual first game. If you've played this game, you're instantly connected with everything that this movie does because it's pretty much adaptating everything from the game except with a couple of extra scenes, like that bath scene that is, like, you feel creepy while you're watching it because there's a little kid in the bath as well. And it's like, Benny Adams there and she's naked, but there's also a little kid there, and it's a mommy taking a bath with her daughter, but Bayonetta is naked, and it's like, is this a fan service scene or is it not? What am I supposed to be feeling here? I need to go take a shower because I feel creepy. I feel creepy. I need an adult. But there is plenty of just fun fan service Bayonetta. There's just plenty of Unwood Bayonetta in the action scenes. It's just a fun movie to watch because if you played the game, it's basically telling the story of the game, and just it's always enjoyable to watch that. And if you've not played the game, it's a good introduction to what the first game is about. And I think somebody who sees this movie and they've never played the game, I think this movie accomplishes the feat of wanting them to go out and play the game, whether it be the first or second one. Which, of course, the second one can be only played on the Nintendo Wii U, because as we've established, fuck you, Nintendo. So, ultimately, I think this is a really good movie. I really enjoy it. I definitely think it's worth a watch. I think the hard thing here is this a must-buy? The unfortunate thing is that because it's based off a video game, and it is about that, and it is taking the story, and the story is fan service heavy in its own way. If you don't like fan service, you're not going to like this. If you don't like video games, you're not going to like this. This is really for those who are in love with the video game series. And yeah, just like Street Fighter 2 is for those who like Street Fighter 2, and Final Fantasy 7 Advent Children in its ways for people who like Final Fantasy 7. Certain movies like Final Fantasy 7 Advent Children are definitely have the ability to be more open in the way they do their story to a mass market appeal, but as opposed to this one, but you know, still, the fans are going to enjoy this much more than those who aren't fans. But ultimately, this is a good movie. I think for most people, it might be a rent or whatever, but it's definitely a good movie, and if you enjoy it, I suggest buying it. I definitely know, I think I would if I see it out there. So at the end of the day, Bayonetta Bloody Fate is a really good movie, and I think worth watching at least once. So I give Bayonetta Bloody Fate a 4 out of 5. So that is it for this episode of Tom Sprugative. I hope you enjoyed it. If you have any emails or comments or anything that you want to leave the show, remember there are simple ways to contact the show. One, you can email us at AppSolutionNetwork132@gmail.com. That's AppSolutionNetwork132@gmail.com. You can also leave us a comment on Stitcher, where you can find our podcast and listen to us there at www.stitcher.com. Like us, listen to our podcast, and leave us a comment there. You can also leave a comment on our Facebook page, which you can find by searching for the App Solution Network on Facebook. Like us and leave us a comment there. And, of course, you can always leave a comment on the website itself at www.an.132productions.com. And, of course, while you're there, check out all the other 132 Productions content. That, of course, includes the Anycast with Relic, the Otaku Momentum, Shin Tiger Curl and his wrestling videos, his Let's Play videos, his anime reaction videos, and, of course, John Ramos and his Toku videos and voice acting videos, and, of course, my other shows, which of course include CMGs, wrestling reviews. Right now we're on the road, the hardcore road to episode 50 for CMG, where we'll review ECW 119 2006. You've got, of course, my Tom's Top 10, whenever I release one of those, the Intergalactic Graphic Review podcast. Which I hope to release a new episode soon. I don't know when, probably after the convention. Of course, the new show, Tom's Toonami D&D, which I've gotten some good feedback on. All that and more on the show. And I think I'm going to start bringing some old shows from other sites over there, including Hexcast. which of course right now you can find it on our other two sites, which includes which is Comic Book Crazy, which you can find at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com, which features Hexcast, Comic Book Crazy, and Spectacular Webs. You can also, the other one is our Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast that you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. So check all that stuff out, and of course also make sure you check out all our friends on the sidebar of the site, links to their site and their podcast. This of course includes Michael Bailey and Views from the Long Box, Spidey Dude, Nicole and Saga Chronicles, Stephen Slaker, and the Critical Hit and Major Spoilers Podcast, and of course Scott Gardner and the Two Two Freaks Podcasting Network. And if I make a suggestion, check out Scott Gardner's Earning My Ears, which is about Disney World, which is where he works, which I think he's pretty much established when he's come on my show that that's where he works. In fact, he's pretty honest that's where he works. So yeah, check out all of those. So that is it for this episode of Tom's Rugged Nova. We're actually going to take about a week off again. But we are going to come back, and we're going to get back into full swing after the convention. And I'm going to come back with a review, as we're going to start... We're going to start Superhero Month. Yes, we are. And we're going to start with a review of a series I've been wanting to review for a long, long time. Ladies and gentlemen, when we return, we're going to review Justice League, the animated series. So, until next time, my Tsunami Generation.
Find cover. It's gonna get too dangerous.
Stay golden.
Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom signing off. And until we meet again, you know the rest.